Hello, and welcome to The Sound of Economics, the podcast from Bruegel, the Brussels-based economic think tank. I'm your host, Rebecca Christie. We are joined today by Ignacio Garcia Becerra, our Bruegel trade fellow, and Professor Amita Batra joining us from Delhi online, because we are going to be talking about EU-India relations, this incredible economic relationship that is playing a more important role given all of the geopolitical tensions in the world today. Amita, could you start out by telling us about the Indian economy now, what its biggest strengths and challenges are, and how that's changing in this multipolar world?
Thank you, Rebecca. And it's a pleasure being here on this podcast today. And you're right in saying, you know, that the India-EU relationship as it's developing is an important, very strategically important relationship, particularly given the environment, global economic and trade environment that we are in today. As for the Indian economy, you know, I think is at one of its strongest points at this point of time. And in the trajectory that we have seen over the last three decades, you see, India has been able to have an average rate of growth of 6% plus. So it's been a very, very impressive growth process that India has looked at, India has experienced and registered in the last three decades since it set off its process of economic liberalization. And particularly at this juncture, presently, India, as I said, is at one of its strongest points, you know, in terms of having recorded a very positive high rate of growth, being the fastest growing economy in the world, with a 7% plus, close to 8% rate of growth projected to be the same even in the next 1 year. And in the uncertain times that we are in today, I think this is a very, very impressive growth. So given the uncertainty, I think the added advantage and added strength that the Indian economy has is in terms of stability. That is, in an uncertain world, Indian economy is offering stability of a high rate of growth, a very stable rate of inflation compared to what we are looking at in the West. The fiscal position as far as the central government is concerned also being fairly stable, and having experienced and registered all through this period, I think post-COVID, one of the first ones to come out of COVID, you know, one of the first ones to register a positive rate of growth after that, post-Ukraine crisis, and more recently, given Trump 2.0, and despite the high tariffs that India has experienced, we, in the last two quarters, have seen a very high rate of growth for India, which, as I said, has been 7% plus, you know. So I think a very positive juncture in India's growth trajectory that we are in at present. However, the challenge that I see moving forward for India or in this growth trajectory is twofold. One, that while India has grown, India's integration with the world, with the global economy in terms of its growth in trade or trade integration has been lacking in terms of relative to the growth process that it has experienced. For a decade and a half, we have been stagnant at less than 2% or around 2% of global trade, of our share in global trade. This stagnant relationship that we've had or integration that we've had with the global economy, I think that is something that India needs to get out of. And in particular, this has been apparent as far as our manufacturing goods trade is concerned, merchandise trade is concerned, which in an overall sense has seen a decline as far as India's share of total trade is concerned, and has seen a stagnant share as far as global trade is concerned. And even more, if we go into a level of detail, you see that within this merchandise trade, we've seen a declining share as far as India's share of manufactured goods trade is concerned. And why I point out this detail is because as far as employment levels are concerned, which I think is another challenge given the kind of demographic profile that India has at this point, we need to really push the manufacturing goods trade. We need to push for manufacturing competitiveness as India is concerned, because the share of manufacturing in India's total GDP has been declining over the last two decades. Since 2006, we've been looking at a decline, and today it contributes just about 13% of the total GDP as far as India is concerned. So I think these, in terms of a positive rate of growth, a stable economy in an environment which is uncertain, remain the positives. We're also, I think, to a certain extent, other than what has happened with the tariffs, in a sweet spot as far as geopolitical positions around the world are concerned. But the challenges remain in terms of the share of manufacturing in our total GDP, manufactured goods trade as far as our share in our total trade is concerned, goods trade as a whole as far as global economy is concerned, and India's integration with the global economy, both in terms of trade as well as, I think, the major component of global trade, which is global value chain-led trade. So I see these as challenges, and I see that if we are able to do something on these fronts, I think India can grow in a dramatically different trajectory.
That is really impressive growth, certainly compared to the near stagnation we've had in Europe for most of this period, where sometimes 1% growth has been seen as an economic victory. Ignacio, how is Europe trying to interface with this very vibrant economy, particularly because, as we just heard, India has struggled to open up its interactions with the world, even as it's been growing domestically?
Well, thanks a lot, Rebecca. And let me start by saying that I totally agree with the analysis that has been presented by Amita about the challenges and opportunities for the Indian economy. Now, the real question is how the European Union and India at this particular point in time can reach agreements that are mutually beneficial. The European Union has a strategic partnership with India since 2004, but quite frankly, it has not really delivered many concrete outcomes. And I think that we have now a new opportunity to create a much stronger partnership with India. I mean, as you know, the European Commission was in Delhi earlier this year, and there was meeting between the Commission and the Indian government, something which is quite extraordinary. It doesn't really happen often. And both sides agreed that there was a need to try to conclude negotiations on a free trade agreement by the end of this year. Now, I'm not sure whether this is going to be possible or not. I understand, however, that it is very likely that there will be a EU-India summit in January, probably in late January. And that suggests to me that there is an intention of trying to use that political opportunity to conclude the FTA negotiation. I think that will be, in my view, extremely, extremely important because there's a potentially high degree of complementarity between the Indian economy and the European economy. Europe needs at this point in time to be able to diversify, to reduce its excessive reliance on trade with both the United States and China, in view of also of the concerns about the policies of the United States and the policies of China. And India offers a huge opportunity for diversification. And at the same time, as Amita has indicated, India really needs to be able to beef up its manufacturing sector, to be able to have a higher proportion of international trade. I mean, she mentioned that India's share of international goods trade is around 2%. If you look into China, it is 17%. Now, no one is really expecting India to reach, at least in the short term, a similar type of proportion of goods trade, but clearly there's a lot of potential to grow. But that also implies that India needs to be able to open up further its economy. I mean, if you actually look into tariffs, India is one of the countries that has the highest average tariff in the world. I think at this point in time, if my figures are right, I think the average tariff in India is 17%. The average tariff in China is 7.5%. And ASEAN countries are somewhere in between 5 and 11%. So there's a huge disparity in terms of tariffs. And also, in comparison with other countries in the region, India is much less integrated in global value chain. So I think potentially there is a significant mutual interest in concluding an FTA which is ambitious, but at the same time is pragmatic. And of course, in the course of this conversation, we will have an opportunity, I think, to talk a little bit more about the challenges of the FTA negotiations and also other issues apart from the FTA, because in my view, when the summit takes place next year, it would be important not only that the FTA negotiations are concluded, I think it would also be an opportunity to give an impulse to negotiations between India and the European Union on investment. Because after all, I think the main challenge for India is how to attract more investment into its economy, particularly into the manufacturing sector. And that requires, in my view, that one looks not only at the FTA, but also into the investment dimension of the relationship. And also we have to acknowledge that there are important differences between India and the European Union on issues relating to the green economy, on issues relating to climate. And in my view, the summit between the EU and India is also an opportunity to establish a new green partnership between India and the European Union. So I will just leave it at that because I think there's quite a few issues there that would merit some further discussion.
Amita, what is the attitude, or what are the attitudes, plural, toward Europe from India? Is it seen as a natural partner? Is it seen as, you know, a little bit of, trying to lecture people on the environment or other things like that? Like, how do people view Europe from where you are?
Well, two things. You see, I think one, as Ignacio said, things as far as the FTA or the economic relationship enhancement is concerned, that began, you know, long before, early in these 21st century, you see, when we started to negotiate for a free trade agreement, and it didn't go very far. Because at that time, I think the perspectives were very different, both as far as India looking at the EU and EU looking at India were concerned. But having picked it up, I think in the last 4 or 5 years, you see, as far as the FTA negotiations are concerned, I think we have progressed very rapidly, and the entire perspective vis-a-vis each other has changed. To a very large extent, this change in perspective has happened because of the change that has happened as far as the global economic order is concerned, you know. As I think, you know, there is what we say a weakening as far as the WTO is concerned, you know, in performing its role or in basically doing its bit as far as maintaining the global economic order is concerned. I think I see EU having stepped up its position and having stepped up its role in terms of carrying forward that legacy to a very large extent, you know. And therein, I also see, you know, in the recent past, you see a certain amount of flexibility that has entered into the EU's attitude, not just vis-a-vis India, but in terms of how it's taking forward its economic negotiations or trade negotiations with the newer FTAs, you know, or within the newer FTAs. And that, I think, also has to do a lot with what has happened as far as Trump 2.0 is concerned. Trump, during his campaign, you know, talking about tariffs and then having implemented the tariffs that implemented or in fact announced initially. And then the many kind of trade deals that have happened, which having happened, you see, one can't say that they are really final trade agreements, you know. So the entire uncertainty, the weakening as far as the global economic order is concerned, I think has placed India and the EU at very different points, you know, in terms of where they were in the past, in terms of their attitude towards each other and attitudes towards integrating with the global economy. And I see in that a positive for India, you know, with the kind of flexibility with which EU was moving forward in terms of its negotiations, whether it was the immediately preceding Trump 2.0 taking over in January, that is in December, having signed the FTA with Mercosur. I think that had a huge amount of flexibility from the EU on several fronts, where we have in the earlier period seen EU to be in the forefront. I mean, I'm going to put it within quotes, you know, of lecturing the world as far as ESG or environment and sustainable goals are concerned, governance is concerned. I think on those issues, EU has to a very large extent or definite extent has loosened its position, has relaxed a little bit to understand the other perspective. That I think is a positive for India. That is a positive as far as EU is concerned. I see the same when I look at the kind of negotiations that EU is undertaking with the ASEAN economies. And now I think the biggest positive that I see as far as EU is concerned is in terms of starting its dialogue with the CPTPP members, you know, that is the Comprehensive and Progressive Trans-Pacific Partnership members, where I see EU really taking upon itself to establish, consolidate, take forward the idea of retaining a global economic order, a rules-based trade order. You know, I think that is something that is also of interest, and that is also of, as far as India is concerned, that is in India's interest, you see, because India would like to see the economic order, a rules-based trade order moving forward, whether that be in terms of the two large economies that are at present in contention with each other, in a trade and technology competition with each other. I think India as well as EU have, we have to navigate both these relationships. But in navigating that relationship, I think being able to negotiate positively and being able to have an early conclusion of the FTA between India and EU will play a positive role for both.
Do you think the relationship has changed since Brexit? Does that make it easier for the EU and India to come to each other as peers without this Commonwealth or post-colonial relationship in the mix?
Well, I'm not so sure if it is post-Brexit, but I think it's more post-Trump 2.0 that I see the flexibility having changed or having entered into EU's attitude. Because I think we've been going on with these negotiations now for quite some time. Even post-revival, I think, which started in 2022. So it's not like we accept accelerated to begin with. The idea was to accelerate the negotiations, but it has taken us this much time to reach this point. And the recent acceleration that I've seen, which I think is very positive, which I think is also accommodative of each other's interests and each other's position as far as some of the sensitive issues are concerned. That, I think, is a consequence more of Trump 2.0 rather than of Brexit.
Ignacio, what do you think?
No, actually, I really agree on much of what Amita has said. Let me, however, start with a personal note, because I was actually in charge of the negotiations with India in between 2007 and 2014. I'm still so sorry that we were not able to conclude the negotiations at that occasion. I think we both missed an opportunity. I agree that there is now more flexibility on the EU side. There's also much more flexibility on the Indian side. I mean, I still remember when I was negotiating with India at that point in time, India would simply refuse to talk about trade and sustainable development. That was an issue that was not going to be discussed in the context of a trade agreement. Now India has taken a much more pragmatic approach. Its agreement with the UK includes a trade and sustainable development chapter. Its agreement with EFTA includes a trade and sustainable chapter. And I know that there are discussions also on this issue in the context of the EU-India agreement. So I think because of the new geopolitical environment, both sides, I think, are taking a much more flexible attitude. At the same time, I think, in my view, it's really going to be important that the agreement, which is concluded, I hope, no later than the EU-India summit, is, of course, pragmatic. And I think, in my view, the European Union would need to understand that for a number of reasons, it's not going to be possible for India to conclude an agreement which is as ambitious as, for instance, the agreement with Mercosur or the agreement with Indonesia. If you look into the agreement that was concluded with Indonesia just a few months ago, it provides for the elimination of tariffs on 98% of tariff lines and 80% at entry into force. I don't really expect that India will go as far as Indonesia in these connections. I think there will have to be more pragmatism from both sides. Although I still think that if really this is going to be an agreement that would have a really economic significance both for India and for the EU, it needs to have enough content from the economic point of view. If there is too much gap in the agreement that is concluded between the EU and India and the agreements that the EU have been developed in the region, particularly with ASEAN countries, I don't think that would necessarily be a very good signal in terms of attracting the European companies to invest in India. There will be a gap. I think that's unavoidable because I think that the political reality of India is what it is and that's not going to change. But in my view, the gap should not be too big between the different type of agreements. I also totally agree with Amita that this new dialogue that has been established between the EU and the CPTPP is a huge opportunity. I think it's something which really corresponds to a determination by the European Union to see how to establish alliances to support rule-based trade at a moment that this is very fundamentally challenged by the United States and where there continues to be fundamental problems in terms of trade with China. So this position by the EU and the CPTPP countries to see how they can better cooperate together, I think, is a very big opportunity. And eventually down the line, I think one should really see to what extent this cooperation could also be extended to countries like India. Of course, it's complicated because India has decided not to negotiate joining the CPTPP. The European Union is not going to join the CPTPP either. The idea is much more to establish a cooperation that could include potentially negotiating agreements between the two blocs. But I think eventually down the line, I think it will be useful to see how India can also fit into this broader trade picture which is emerging in the region. So all in all, I would find that there's quite a lot of opportunities. Of course, still there are going to be difficulties. I mean, I'm a trade negotiator, so all trade negotiations, by definition, the toughest issues are only resolved at the last minute. So I think that probably there's still a lot of discussion, I'm sure, about tariff on cars, tariff on steel. There are going to be discussions about CBAM. There are going to be discussions about the quality control orders of India. So there's a lot of difficult issues, which I'm sure are still very much unresolved. But, you know, you cannot go negotiating forever. At some point in time, you really need to cut down the chase and to come to a conclusion. And my sense of the time is now.
CBAM, of course, is the Carbon Border Adjustment Mechanism. In the next part of our podcast, I'd like to talk a little bit more about the specifics of some of these tough sectors, about environmental considerations like carbon border adjustments, like manufacturing and agriculture, where India has historically been very reluctant to open up its agriculture markets to the world. So with that sort of broad framing, I'd like each of you to pick out the things that you were important and just talk us through some of the things that we'll need to look at in the coming months and years. Amita?
Well, I think all of these are important, and all of these have a very significant place in the bilateral negotiations between India and EU. On the manufacturing front, as I said, I particularly would like to highlight that, and I think that's very, very important. That's very core to India's growth process at this point of time, and the challenge of employment, you know. We need to really do something about manufacturing, where I think participation in an FTA and a participation in an FTA with EU, which has, in many senses, you see, in many fields, still dominates as far as technology is concerned. It is a tech leader in many domains. It has some of the leading firms as far as technology is concerned. And that is where I think some kind of value chain integration should be looked at and should be something that we should be strategically looking forward to concretize as far as this FTA is concerned. One part of that, I think, derives from what Ignacio said earlier, you know, in terms of how India's attitude has changed over the years, you see. But where is it that we are at this point of time and how far do we expect India to go? That is in the field of tariffs, you know. Yes, we've seen India to have amongst its comparator set of economies some of the highest level of average applied MFN tariffs, you know, in the non-agricultural or manufacturing sector. But we also see over the last two budgets, if you see in India, we have seen a change happening and a recognition by the government that they need to bring about a change in order to integrate with global value chains. So there have been some sectors, some select sectors where this global value chain integration has led to a reduction in tariffs so that we can better integrate. The imported components can be integrated into, can be brought in for increasing the manufacturing competitiveness as far as India is concerned. So some work on tariffs is there. There was also in the last budget an announcement by the finance minister that there would be a comprehensive review of the tariff structure. So I'm still very hopeful that that will happen before we see the next budget. And that will kind of proceed on from where we left in the last budget. But that, yes, is an absolutely essential component for us to not just be able to negotiate FTAs with the developed economies, but also FTAs that would contribute to enhancing our manufacturing competitiveness. So yes, absolutely essential on the manufacturing front for us to have FTAs that serve that purpose. The second bit, you know, that you talk about in terms of environment, I think, again, I'll pick up from what Ignacio said, you know, in the sense there was a time when India was not willing to talk about environment in any of its FTAs. In fact, the position that India has maintained all along that as far as climate change is concerned, these are issues that are non-trade issues, you see, a position that we adopted in our multilateral negotiations and somehow kind of wove them in even into our FTAs, even though many FTAs, particularly those where EU was negotiating, have moved on to negotiating climate change, environment and sustainable governance in a very different manner. But again, here, if we see the UK FTA, I think two or three things that have happened. One, of course, environment and sustainable governance in particular, you know, the change having been brought in. These components have entered into the India-UK FTA. We've also for the first time seen, as far as India is concerned, liberalize 90% of its tariff lines. This has never happened before. This is a first ever, you see, that we've done in the sense of really opening up substantially all trade, you know, between two FTA partners. We've not done it earlier. So I see these positive changes happening. We've also brought in labor government, you know, issues related to worker conditions there. We have internally, most recently, over the last week, also announced labor reforms, labor codes as far as India is concerned, many of which aspects you see now would be able to, I think, ease or make it easy if they would facilitate, you know, our FTA negotiations with countries, with economies like the EU. On environment in particular, that is where we talk about CBAM. I think that is a difficult issue because we have varying perspectives on this and varying views on these. I think EU looks at CBAM as an extension of its emission trading system, you see, which it has internally, and sees it only in terms of an extension to the rest of the world. But I think one needs to look at it from a developing country perspective in terms of the ability of the large number of medium and small scale enterprises, you see, for whom it would be administratively difficult to follow the detailed input-output details that have to be given in terms of carbon emissions for the purpose of following CBAM, you know. That's one part of it, you know. The other part of it is the kind of change that EU is bringing about, both in terms of its quotas as far as steel imports are concerned, you know, given what we are looking at in terms of excess capacity, dumping as far as steel is concerned, prices changing as far as steel sector is concerned. You know, a lot of changes are happening on that front. You know, steel is one of the important exports as far as India is concerned to the EU, comes under currently under CBAM. CBAM is expected to expand to other goods, you know. So in all that, you see, not having time for a sufficient time, as I would say, you know, as is mandated under the multilateral trade rules. I mean, for EU, which is such a, you know, wanting to take forward the global economic order, rules-based trade, not to take into account the special and differential treatment that the WTO allows for, you see, in making the transition that CBAM mandates or requires of countries, you see. I think that makes the position of a developing country like India very difficult, because there is transition time that's required. The transition time is essential because we need adoption both in terms of a carbon pricing mechanism, B, as I said, in terms of upscaling the administrative ability of the large number of medium and small scale enterprises, and C, in terms of just technology to be able to shift from the kind of production that we have at present, you see, or many medium and small scale enterprises would be following, which would and could be more carbon emitting than what the EU expects, you see, and hence make many of the products from India more expensive or less competitive when it comes to entering the EU, you know. So in that sense, you see, there are several factors and there are several strands to the argument when we talk about environment. It cannot just be, you know, in terms of, yes, we align in terms of our interest towards a greener economy, towards a greener world, towards a world that is working towards, you know, positive environmental goals. But we also have to look at it in terms of how can we, in a collaborative manner, help India achieve the goals that EU has set out, you know, or EU sets out, not just for itself, you see, but that it hopes that the world will follow for a better environment for everybody.
Super interesting. I want to pick out a couple of things you said just because they went by fast, and people like me who don't know this as well as you, I think it might benefit from reviewing. So you talk about the UK FTA, I guess that's the India-UK FTA, which went into force around 2022. Excellent. And then on CBAM, you know, I had not given much thought to the administrative requirement. We mostly talk about the carbon pricing and about the financial impact of anybody having to make payments, but the administrative impact is also a big deal. Ignacio, you're the man on this stuff. Tell us what it means.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I would really like to build upon the two issues that have been raised by Amita, because I agree that they're probably the two greatest challenges at this point in time, both for the conclusion of the FTA negotiations and also to see what else needs to be done in this partnership apart from concluding the FTA negotiation. Now, on the first question, I totally agree that the ambition has to be to have a much closer value chain integration in the manufacturing sector in particular between India and the European Union. Now, the FTA can contribute to that. I would say particularly if the FTA proceeds to eliminate relatively rapidly tariffs relating to intermediate and capital goods. If the FTA also confirmed that India has an open regime for investment in the manufacturing sector, which I think is the case as far as formal conditions in order to invest into India. But if you really wanted to have a step of change in terms of European investment into India, I think you really need to be able to go beyond that. And that's why I emphasize before that, I think it would be a big mistake to leave to one side the importance of the investment dimension. And I hope that therefore that the summit is going to give a signal that apart from concluding the FTA, India and the European Union should focus on concluding a new type of investment agreement. Not only investment protection, that of course is going to be there, but I don't think it's necessarily the most important dimension. Also including investment facilitation, which is always often more relevant in terms of creating the right business environment to facilitate investment. And also looking concretely about how to identify a specific investment opportunity, particularly when it comes to the green economy, because I think there's a huge potential for more investment by European companies in India on the green economy, also from the perspective of seeking to de-risk in terms of the relationship between the European Union and China. So I see a lot of opportunities which I see there, and in my view, this is something that it would be important that there's a little bit of a political push from the top to focus on investment after the FTA negotiations have been concluded. But I would like to come also specifically specifically to the issues relating to CBAM. So I would tend to agree that probably at this point in time, the main challenge is compliance with reporting requirements for small and medium-sized Indian companies, particularly in the steel sector, because there's, I think, about 40% of exports to the EU of the steel sector comes from MSMEs. So I think that's certainly a particular challenge at this point in time. What I would suggest is that the summit should also agree that India and the EU have to work on establishing a much closer partnership on the green economy. And part of this partnership should be to discuss what is the best way to ensure a proper interface between the carbon price of the EU, which is currently quite consolidated, and the very incipient carbon price which is being developed in India through the CCTS. My particular suggestion would be between now and 2030, the CBAM charge is going to be very, very small. The main cost is going to be reporting requirements, because the charge which is going to be imposed would only become significant by 2020-30. So that gives almost a five-year period during which both sides can try to identify the best way to ensure a proper interaction between the two carbon pricing regimes, clearly not expecting India to come to a carbon price which is in any way comparable to that of the EU, so it's going to be significantly lower, taking into account the different conditions of India and those of the European Union. But in the meantime, I think that in my view, the European Union should be ready to provide financial support to help particularly Indian SMEs to be able to establish a system of reporting which is adequate to their circumstances. And I would argue that financial support should at least be comparable to the financial charge that would be imposed to CBAM. Now, exactly the modalities for this to be worked out, I think that's something that would need to be discussed by the two sides. I think there's a lot of technical complications, how all of this is going to be done. But I mean, the very principle should be that certainly between now and 2030, there should be some way for the European Union to help India to be able to better comply with the reporting requirements of under CBAM. And beyond this, I think one should really see how to enhance opportunities for European companies to invest in the green economy in India. And in order to do all this, I would suggest what you would really need is that at the top, both leaders ask both sides to see how to define the parameters of this green partnership that could then be developed over the next year. So that would be my concrete suggestion about how to try to deal with the challenge relating to CBAM.
In the last part of our podcast, we tend to be a little more forward-looking if we can, but it's very difficult to be forward-looking right now because the world economy is so uncertain. So I guess I'd like to ask each of you, maybe talk about China a little bit and just the big wild card that they're playing in geopolitics as well as the global economy. How does that work? Specifically in the context of affecting the climate for the EU-India relations, I should clarify.
Do you want me to go first?
Please do.
Just a little bit of carryover from what Ignacio said earlier, which I think, in terms of the FTA conclusion, one would want to see as early as possible the conclusion and if possible with certain investment provisions, you know. I think that is very important, even if we negotiate just that investor protection bit later, you know. So I think that should be the only part that should be left out, because it's important to have the investment component into it. And a revenue sharing model, as far as CBAM is concerned, I think that's a very, very positive input if that's brought in. And, you know, lastly, in terms of the compliance, you know, if there can be assistance in terms of reporting systems and bringing around the small and medium enterprises, I think this would imply the FTA to be viewed very positively, I think, by the larger section, as far as Indian community is concerned. As far as China is concerned, I think, you know, I mean, how is it shaping as far as India-EU negotiations are concerned or relationship is concerned? I think it's more the nature of what is happening at the bilateral level in terms of US-China, the manner in which the trade and technology competition there is evolving, that it's creating, I think, a pressure for all economies to have greater diversification and look elsewhere, you know. So while there is no denying the fact, you see, that the single source dependence on China will continue for some time, you know, because they are way ahead of everybody else as far as many of the more you know, forward-looking, as you said, of future as far as technology is concerned, whether it be in terms of green technology or maybe even as far as AI is concerned, you know. So one is conscious of the fact that there is going to be a certain amount of this concentrated sourcing from China in certain sectors that is likely to continue for a while. But there is also the necessity, you know, given the environment that we are in and the change that's happening as far as global economic environment is concerned and the increased amount of uncertainty as far as the relationship of these two is concerned, the importance of diversification and the importance of building resilient supply chains with other partners, you see. And in that, I think EU is and can potentially be a very significant partner for India, particularly in these industries of the future, you know. As you said, green technology, and as I think, you know, in terms of AI, I think these are areas where we really need to build these kinds of collaborative relationships. Of course, the other very important aspect is in terms of critical minerals, where again, today, the position is very, very difficult, or I would say, it's a well-known position in terms of the capacity as far as processing capacity is concerned, almost entirely with China. It cannot be changed in the next couple of years, you see. So we need a longer period plan. But at the same time, we do need to move forward with alliances that are very concrete in terms of building resilience as far as critical minerals supply is concerned, you know. And here, I think the important aspect that the FTA can cover, you see, is in terms of investment, where we need, as far as European investment is concerned, as far as India's resources, whatever be they, in terms of critical minerals, I think a collaborative approach to the EU investments in India's critical minerals, you see, would be very, very positive, both in terms of, you know, taking us forward as far as green economy is concerned, but also taking us forward in terms of the kind of position that is developing as far as China for both India and EU is concerned.
Ignacio?
Well, I mean, I have to say I absolutely totally agree with everything that Amita has said. I mean, this has been a very consensual conversation. I think that in a way, the European economy at this point in time is being subject to a bit of a perfect storm. I mean, apart from the domestic challenges in terms of growth in Europe, there's the shock which is coming from the U.S. tariffs. There's the shock which is coming from in Chinese overcapacities. There's also the coercive pressures which are coming both from the U.S. and from China, although in of their different nature. And I totally agree that in those conditions, it's existential for the European Union to be able to diversify, to be able to establish solid alliances between countries that want to maintain as much as possible a rule-based and an open trade relationship. And I think that the role of India in that connection is critical. The joint work which is being done on dialogue with the CPTPP countries also goes very much in that direction. I think you have mentioned, Amita, the issue of resilient value chains. I mean, I think that India was actually party to this IPEF agreement that was sponsored by the Biden administration on resilient value chains that I think has now been abandoned, as far as I understand, by the Trump administration. And one of the ideas which I personally think could be quite interesting, depending on how the UCPTPP dialogue evolves, would be to try to see whether an agreement on resilient value chains can also be negotiated between the EU and the CPTPP countries. And if that was going to be the case, I think one should consider to what extent India might not also be interested in being party to such an agreement. Although I agree with you that a lot can also be done bilaterally, and that's why, again, I really think that investment is so critical. I totally agree with you. The FTA should have a component on investment. I mean, at least investment market access is always a component of free trade agreements. India has a very open regime for investment in the manufacturing sector. I hope that the FTA is going to confirm and consolidate the existing level of openness of India as far as obstacles to investment market access are there. And then building upon that, I would say investment protection, investment facilitation, but also a procedure for identification of concrete investment projects. Because I think particularly in the green economy, on critical raw materials, the more that you establish a way of trying to identify potential investment projects for European companies, how this can be supported, how this can be the risk, I think that in my view would make the partnership much more concrete and much more productive. And Obviously, we are living in a challenging time, but I think that also creates more opportunities for the EU and India to cooperate.
Do you like to weigh in again, Amita?
Not really. The only aspect that I think where I see a huge positive as I said, right in the beginning, you know, as far as EU is concerned, is it's the dialogue that it has started, I think, this formal dialogue with the CPTPP. And I hope and wish that there can be some way of India also participating in CPTPP, because I do see that as the real anchor and harbinger, you see, as far as taking forward the idea of rules-based trade is concerned. And I feel that EU, given its mettle, you know, and proven mettle, you know, as far as trade and rules-based trade and its kind of disciplined approach to following everything as far as rules-based and multilateralism is concerned, can be the push for this continued process in this direction, you see. It can be the real push. And if CPTPP and EU come together, this could be the anchor. And if India can somehow be brought in, you know. I know that India thinks at this time that it's not as yet ready, but I personally feel that if we were to announce our participation, signal that we want to participate, I think a way can be found, because as I said right in the beginning, we do have a favorable position geopolitically, you know. And we would be, I don't think we would find our entry very difficult. Yes, we would have to abide by many kinds of policy changes that would need to be brought about for us to participate in CPTPP. But I think that can happen over time. So I think that is something, I mean, not yet in the immediate this year or in the next couple of months that I see, but I hope we can at least signal our interest in participating in CPTPP, because that can be the basis, anchor, harbinger of taking forward the idea of rules-based trade in this very, very uncertain world that we are living in today.
I'm so glad you went through that, because I was just thinking, I wonder what the prospects are for India working with this. For listeners who aren't familiar, it's the Comprehensive and Progressive Agreement for the Trans-Pacific Partnership. This was the successor to the originally proposed Trans-Pacific Partnership that fell apart when the U.S. backed out. And it's been other countries, the Coalition of the Willing, have been moving forward already. And the EU, and I guess now India, are looking at ways to work with this very important sector of the economy. I've been so interested to hear from both of you about investment and supply chains as key things here. It sounds sort of obvious put like that, but listening to you both, I realized there were so many aspects of this that I had not thought through. We're running out of time, but as we come back, I'd love to hear any closing thoughts. And I'm particularly still thinking through how we can get investment moving back and forth between these two areas, because that will do so much just to link the economies on their own, even without formal channels.
Well, absolutely. I really think that this is a fundamental challenge, both for the Indian economy and for the European economy. I think that Europe needs to diversify and needs to build also alternative value chains to the risk policies, and India is the perfect partner for that. And if there is an increasing political realization in India that the big challenge for India development and to maintain a high rate of growth for its economy is going to have a more internationally competitive manufacturing sector, that is going to require foreign investment, and that is going to require creating the right conditions for that investment. As I said, a combination of the free trade agreement together with an investment agreement of a new type, together with the reforms that India is undertaking, together with the reforms that the European Union also needs to undertake in its own economy, all of that creates, in my view, a combination of factors that would really lead to a very significant increase both of bilateral trade and bilateral investment flows. And again, putting this in the broader perspective about trying to create a pole of stability in the global economy of as broad as possible coalition of countries that consider that despite the geopolitical tensions, there's a need to maintain and further develop a rule-based trading system. We haven't talked, by the way, about the WTO, but in a future opportunity, I think I would also be useful to have a little bit of a chat in terms about how the EU and India could cooperate better in a WTO framework, because I think it would be, in my view, a mistake to forget that at the end of the day, we also need a multilateral institution which provides a baseline on which different initiatives can build upon.
Amita, final thoughts?
Well, I agree. Absolutely. I think I'll pick up on the last first, which is that India and EU need to get together as far as WTO reforms are concerned, because I continue to maintain the fact, you see, that we can't think of WTO having become completely redundant. Yes, WTO in its current form does not serve the purpose of regulating trade has evolved over the last two and a half decades, you see. But it should be our effort to make the WTO or to reform the WTO to be conducive to the kind of trade that is developing, you see, in terms of intermediate goods trade, in terms of supply chains as they've been evolving, you see, in terms of making supply chains more resilient. I think we need to have more conversations, more dialogues on WTO reform and governance hereafter, you see, once we are through with the FTA or even along with the FTA, you see, because it's only through the WTO that we can have rules that apply to everybody, you see, in terms of making concessions or allowing for the change to settle in as far as lesser developed countries are concerned. I think for the benefit of the entirety of the world, it's very important that there be a global institution, and that I think the WTO needs to play a role. India and EU need to come together to talk about WTO governance and reforms. I think we need to put our heads together on that. On the FTA, as I said, it has a very significant role to play in India's growth story, which, yes, has been very positive for the last 3 decades, particularly in the last decade or so, when we've seen so many changes, so many unpredictable events happening, you see, almost every decade, every 5 years, we've seen an uncertain, unpredictable event being thrown at us. I think India has come out very well in terms of its rate of growth, but there continues to be that missing component or a weaker component in terms of its integration with the world economy, particularly its trade integration and value chain integration, where it needs to build manufacturing competitiveness, which can contribute towards its employment challenge, wherein this FTA can play a very significant role. And one aspect, I mean, of course, trade liberalization on India's part in terms of tariff reduction is very important. As I said, I'm hopeful that the process that was started in our last two budgets will continue. But one more important aspect that I think we haven't talked about, and we don't have the time to, but I'll just, you know, kind of throw it in at this point of time, is to have the right kind of rules of origin in the FTA, you see, to be able to make possible India's integration in the value chains, you see, in terms of some form of cumulation. If we can have that brought into the FTAs, you see, whatever we need to work on, I think that will take forward the idea of bringing in India to a greater extent as far as value chain integration and manufacturing competitiveness is concerned. So if we are able to do that, and I hope we are able to see an early conclusion of the FTA, if not by the end of the year, which at least I was very hopeful of, but maybe by the end of January, as is being said, that there is going to be an India-EU summit. I hope we see it then. I think it'll have a positive role to play. India and EU both, otherwise, I think, you see, need to cooperate on several fronts to be able to retain what they both value in terms of a rules-based multilateral trade order and economic order, you see, in the world.
Thank you so much. This whole podcast has been an absolute masterclass in not just the EU-India relationship, but also all of the considerations necessary to get a functional free trade agreement. I've learned so much. Professor Amita Batra, thank you for joining us from Delhi, where it's such an honor to have you. Ignacio Garcia Becerro, your expertise in the EU and your experience working on these types of trade talks and this specific trade talk just enriches us so much. So thank you to both of you for coming. I'm Rebecca Christie. This has been the Bruegel podcast, The Sound of Economics. You can find our related research and links to public events that we've done on our website, Bruegel.org, and the podcast is available on all your favorite platforms. Thanks so much for listening, and see you next time.